Our speaker, yeah, Emily. Ooh, had a moment. Okay, our speaker, Emily. We'll share her own recovery journey, and then she'll guide us through a study of step 6. Did I get that part right?
Yeah.
Okay, she's going to be referring to our big book, Eating Disorders Anonymous. She'll provide page references as indicated, and there will be time for questions and member sharing after Emily finishes speaking. Some members find that the book is much easier to follow if using a paper version of the book. If you only have the book on an electronic device, you may prefer to just listen. I'm so excited to hear Emily speak today, and the floor is yours.
Oh, thanks very much. Okay, so I have a timer in front of me, so just in case you are like, oh, should I let you know? You don't need to. Cool. I'm going to be watching it. Okay, cool. All right. Hi. Okay. All right. I just want to say that you may have heard Regina say some pretty intense things about the speaker this week. And all I want to say is that she was not talking about me. Does not mean I am not amazing. I just want to clarify in case anyone was expecting anything. But I do have the opportunity to speak, and I'm sure that's for a reason. And I'm really grateful. So my name's Emily. I'm in recovery from an eating disorder, and I'm currently in Arizona. What it was like. All right, so growing up, I very much felt like an outsider all around. I felt very uncool. Like in my own family, it was just, everybody seemed so much cooler than me. Like not so much my parents, but like, I had 3 siblings, my older sister and my 2 older brothers.
Emily, can you come maybe a little, closer to the microphone?
Is that loud enough? Because I can switch to the phone.
That's better. Let's continue.
All right, great. Okay. So, I have an older sister and 2 older brothers, and basically my parents were fighting all the time. That's what it was like growing up. And then when I was about 11 or 12, I think it was 12, my brother Jonathan died from a drug overdose, and it was very sudden and unexpected. And that was, I think until then I kind of used like books and fantasy, just in my own little world. And I was, you know, honestly, I think I was taken care of in that little world, possibly by my higher power.
Emily, let's
Am
switch.
I okay? Yeah, I'm for sure going to switch the phone.
Okay, let's try that.
Yeah, my internet's not reliable.
Can you start over at this age, my brother died, maybe start there?
Yeah.
That sounded important.
No, I understand. I'm just going to change the audio. Can you hear me?
No, you're garbly.
Try turning off the computer, but staying on the phone.
Okay.
Sometimes when you're doing both, so we'll lose your picture, but you'll be on the phone. We're such a nice patient.
Hi, can you hear me?
Excellent.
Fantastic. This is how it's meant to be. Great. So when I was about 12, my brother Jonathan died of a drug overdose. This was very unexpected. Not that he wasn't into drugs for a long time. He left the house pretty young. Both my brothers did. But I was very sheltered in this experience. I was the youngest child, and a lot of thank God for you, Emily, was put on me because my siblings were, quote unquote, troublesome. So I was pretty good, got good grades, felt pretty nerdy, felt pretty ugly for a lot of my life growing up. And I think a lot of that had to do with my weight and then, you know, certain experiences of being treated differently because of it. And also even in my own family being treated differently because of it. So there was definitely a sort of fixation, but I didn't feel the need to, I wasn't coherent enough to like fixate on it and be like, I'm going to do something about it. Even after my brother passed, it was still sort of just like in shock. So then I was kind of, you know, shaky after that. I was in high school at that point, and around, I had had a serious relationship, and then around 15, I think, no, 14 probably, my brother Christian died very suddenly in his sleep. And there was a lot of mystery around it for me. Again, I wasn't given a lot of answers. I didn't really know what their lives were like. I didn't feel adequate enough to connect with them. And yeah, just a number of other things. And so that happened. And that obviously was a real game changer for me. And I sort of broke off from reality. Like, I've heard people say that when you're like, when you have an eating disorder or something like that, it could be that, you know, your soul, it's not that it's died necessarily, but something like scared it so much or upset it so much that it was just like, I'm going to shut down for some time. And I could really relate to that because I was like, yeah, I think a lot of who I was just suddenly could not handle the world. It was a very, very, very scary place. So I kind of glazed through high school, pretty much acting normal. I was pretty horrified if anybody knew about my brothers, which I knew that lots of people did in school. And, you know, what are you going to do? But it sucked. I just hated this idea that people would see me differently. And then I decided to move away to go to college. And I felt like I had been called, I had a calling to go to the United Kingdom. And I really wanted to go to England. So I applied to 5 schools, 4 in England, 1 in Scotland. And I got into some of them, but long story short, I went to Scotland, and which was kind of a disappointment at the time, but it was good. But it was a really big geographic. I sort of recreated myself in Scotland, very much so. So when I was there, again, I hadn't talked about my brother's death. I pretty much refused to talk about it. As a family, we were broken, and whatever healing was happening, I don't think it was happening together. There was just not a lot of discussion. I mean, it was just tough. And so when I went away, I still had that sort of denial going on. And then, you know, I've always been a writer and a creator of, like, I'm a lover of, like, you know, fiction and stories and stuff. So then I got it into my head that, like, I wanted, maybe I could have the nickname of my favorite, like, character that I had written, and her name was Randy Jane. Anyway, actually, it was Randy Peterson, but Jane's my middle name. So then I took the nickname Randy Jane because my friend, one of my first friends, suggested it. And by this time, I was pretty deep in my eating disorder, but I did not know it at all. It was my first year of college, and I had started to diet before I left, and I was definitely getting hooked. And I think at that point, the point that I realized I had a problem was like after I got to college and I kept dieting, like I knew it was happening fast, but I wasn't upset or even concerned really until I looked in the mirror and was like, I should probably stop now. And then I just didn't. And that was probably the only time I ever thought that. So that was my first year. It was just tough. I didn't have a lot of friends. But then I was like, hey, at least I'm getting thin. If I'm thin, then I look like that character that I made up, because she was a scrappy little fighter and I wanted to be like that. And I wasn't when I was growing up. I was overweight and awkward, and people said I was boisterous, which I felt was like a horrible thing to say. So I didn't tell anybody about Emily, or about what I was or who I was in my past life, and I did not tell anybody about my brothers. And the eating disorder raged on. I got a lot of high from the anorexia. I got the validation that I was looking for, perhaps because I was looking for a certain kind of validation that's not even necessarily always positive. But I can see that in retrospect. But at the time, I was like, I'm the it girl. And in my mind, I swear, it was like, if I am a character in an indie movie and I'm like super cute, then this is the point where everything gets better. Makes sense that I had this totally tragic childhood, but this is when everything gets better. And nothing bad can happen. It's just going to be, you know, happy rainbows. And I didn't obviously consciously think that, but I think that's why I clung to the eating disorder so hard. So what happened was, in my last year of college, my flawless anorexia started to falter and I began to binge. And this very quickly became uncontrollable for me. And that was pretty much my worst nightmare, because I had built this little fantasy where not only were my brothers still alive, I was, you know, but also I was someone else. I was cool. And suddenly, I was going back to being Emily, and I was going to be so lame to these people who had thought that I was cool, and they were going to reject me, and they weren't going to want to be my friend, because I really struggled making friends when I was growing up. And so that was absolutely horrifying. And so I made it through the year somehow. There was a lot of hiding, a lot of disappearing. When I was in my anorexia, I could be pretty social. I don't know if anyone can relate, but so once binging started, it wasn't long until the purging started. For me, that was a reactive mechanism, like a compensation kind of a thing. So that was all happening, and then I graduated, and then after I graduated, I ended up going to treatment. Took a little while, took some prodding, but I went to eating disorder treatment finally. And that was okay. It was very good. I learned a lot of important lessons there. But I also exercised in the bathroom. And I said the right things, but I did not tell the truth. And so when I left, I just went back to what I was doing before. But I want to get to the good stuff. So lots of miserable things happened, and I tried a lot of things, like I tried crazy things. I don't want to throw anything out there in case anyone's like, oh, what's that? But then when I was about 23, maybe 22, and I'm 28 now, I was living with this woman who kept telling me about 12-step programs. And she just went on and on about him, but I was like, oh, I don't know, I've checked out OA. And for me, it was a little triggering. You know, I liked it, but I just didn't think that it was there. And I was like, oh, no, okay, I'll try and go to, like, you know, therapy and stuff. But, like, my insurance was, like, starting to cut out, and things were getting way more expensive. And I was like, damn, I wish I had been more in this place when I had the money for it. But then I was like, all right, I don't know what led me to it, but I Googled Eating Disorders Anonymous or something like that. And then there it was. I wish I could watch myself in that moment and see what I Googled. But, you know, if you ever hear people talk about the feeling of, like, you know, like coming home, I guess that was kind of it. But more so it was like, well, if there's anything, there's any program, this is it. Not necessarily a ton of, like, faith, but I was like, okay. So I got in, I started in the online meetings. What really struck me the most at that time was that I could relate so much to what other people were saying. And that wasn't the case in my normal life. I just didn't really care about what other people cared about because I couldn't, because I just spent all day pretending to be something that I wasn't until I got home and was something that I couldn't talk about. And now here was all these people who were like, we're talking about it. So that was cool. And I was pretty eager to start working the steps until I heard about the God thing. And then I was like, well, I have to leave. What I can say is that I'm very grateful that I did the step one work. And I think I even did it on my own before having a sponsor. And I just remember going over my work and it was like, have you ever tried to stop your eating disorder in the past or anything like that? I forget what the question was. And I just remember looking at all these things that I had started and then stopped because they weren't right for me. Like treatment. I was like, oh yes, I left because they would not give me a meal plan that would help me lose weight. That's a real thing. I just saw the pattern. That was my first experience seeing my own pattern. And it was also heart-wrenching because it was like, I thought that was me. I thought that was my soul, my inner part of me guiding me in life. And it wasn't. It was something that didn't want me to get better. You know, still hard for me to understand, you know, how to integrate the disorder in myself. But I started working the steps. I found a sponsor who was kind of on my page, spirituality-wise. And I went about to step like 9-ish, had to switch sponsors to an in-person sponsor. And then at that point was like, it's a long story. I got to another sponsor and she was like, we're just going to start over. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. It's been pretty disjointed up until now, as you can kind of tell. So we started over and we used the AA Big Book and we worked from there and my behaviors did not stop. Not even when I went all the way through, but everything got better. Everything. I mean, my behaviors got better. But I felt better. There was like less and less reason for me to leave. I mean, even if it wasn't answering all my problems instantly, it wasn't what it was before. And I wasn't alone anymore. So that really was important to me. And so I worked them and then I worked them through again as I was working with the sponsee. And you know, like my fourth step was a little bit deeper this time. I don't know. I'm getting lost and I don't want to talk too long. I do that. I just learned a lot. I've worked the steps a few times. The steps are where it's at for me. Those are the thing. And I didn't get that. I really thought that everyone was delusional and had I was like, how are these people, these smart people, how many people are buying into this dilute? I don't know what I thought. I think someone put it well once where they were like, yeah, I thought everyone was lying. Like everybody who said they were doing well or was recovered, I was just like, they're lying. That's not true. But then I became more accepting of the fact that it was possible. And that was the first time that I had had hope in a long time. I had already learned that I needed to not have secrets because secrets kept me sick. So I had already started to talk about my past, but the steps were a much more thorough version of that. For me, they addressed the eating disorder in a way that made me look at it and made me put in the work instead of just sort of external things. And I felt like, oh, I needed this. So after about a year and a half, I was just binging and restricting at that point. Those were pretty much the ones I struggled with the most. And I thought, well, I don't know if I'm ever going to stop binging. I really didn't know if it would ever stop. And then it did. I don't know. I was doing my work, I guess. I was praying. At the time, I prayed for the willingness to let it go. It wasn't the end of the eating disorder, but it was a huge step towards having a life again. So what it's like now, I don't know how long it's been since then, maybe a few years, a couple years. I have a life. It's not, I'm not always like sunshine roses, but the reasons that I'm not sunshine roses are hardly ever about my eating disorder. Whereas before, they were the only reasons. The only reasons. Or my past, you know, like those were the things. And now I have so many tools to try this life again on new terms. It's a different world to me now than it was when I was growing up. And it has to be because I saw death. I felt lost. Things changed. But I also grew from that. And the more I work the steps and the more I'm in the program, the more I grow from that rather than stay stuck. And that's just really helpful because everyone's always said, look, well, you have a great, you know, you have a lot of ability to help people, but how can I help people if I'm in my eating disorder? So I'm just extremely grateful for the program. Most recently I worked the steps the EDA way, and that was just, I think, probably drew me even closer to my higher power and gratitude. It was the first time I was able to work the steps, like where my eating disorder really wasn't the main focus. It was, but there was a lot of other life as well. And it helped me to see how this is still how we work the program. So I have a cat. I live in an apartment. I have a job. I only work 3 days a week right now because sometimes I get burnt out. But it's okay. I'm pretty financially secure. And thinking about moving to somewhere rainy. And I'm very connected with the EDA group. I have a really close relationship with my sister and my father. And I have hope that, you know, my mom and I don't talk, but at least I'm able to pray about it. Whereas, you know, otherwise I would be pretty hopeless. So, I don't know if that was a great, like, this is how it is now. But honestly, I would never trade my worst day for my best day in the eating disorder. And I heard that before and I did not believe it. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I believe it. Because I could be someone now and I don't think I was going anywhere. So I'm definitely going to move on to step six. And it sucks that the internet cut out because I was really watching my time. Okay. So step six is, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So in the book, it kind of starts out by saying, oh, okay, we just finished step five. So whatever we're feeling, we honor it. I think that's important. I think that also feeds into how we deal with step six, because step six is a list of character defects. So that's what it was for me. That's what I got from my sponsor. And I was like, okay, I want to do something about these. I see how they're hurting me. But currently I'm working the steps. I have not been taught the way that the steps would have me deal with them yet. So I have to wait. Like it was kind of like a, okay, step six, it's a thing. It's like, I can't just charge ahead and fix it. So I kind of hung out with the awareness of them. And I wanted to talk about, let me grab my book. All right, so it does talk a little bit about the 10th step. I wasn't super excited about the 10th step for a while, but now it's extremely vital for me. So it's just a matter of experience. So it teaches me how to be content to have my feelings, like my feelings about my defects, but not necessarily act on them, or at least not act on them alone. So these are kind of where the defects come from. It talks about what happens when our emotional states are of central importance in our lives. And what happens is that when that's the case for me, I lose perspective. I thought it was very interesting. They say that in the book, it says that we are weakened and diminished. somewhat ironically, we were actually weakened and diminished, since putting ourselves at the center meant we lost sight of the broader context in which our lives made sense. It also meant we were vulnerable to crippling levels of resentment, fear, self-pity, shame, guilt, confusion, frustration, and despair. So I thought about that a little bit, and like, how was I weakened and diminished? And I really disempowered myself by staying stuck. I was pretty paralyzed when everything was about me and everything was about what's going on with me. Still kind of happens sometimes. I diminished my value in the eating disorder and my functionality, and I missed out on connections. So it's like, even though I was trying to get things that I wanted, I actually was missing out on the very things that I was trying to get. And I was weakened and I was diminished. So also, all those feelings are basically what my eating disorder behaviors feed on. It's what fuels the eating disorder. So sometimes something like a 10th step is very useful to come in and sort of be like a sifter, because instead of just having the emotion and then going to the action, I have the emotion and then I process through it on paper, and potentially that changes my action. And I think that's like, that is what step six is about, is, okay, we have to stop just like knee-jerk reacting to things, and even start questioning our own behavior, because it's not infallible. So for an example, let me think. Like, if I make it about me, it might mean that I'm just like exaggerating my role in some way or another. And when I, what I see in the fourth and fifth step are the patterns where this happens again and again, where I act out in these ways because for some reason or another, I'm exaggerating my role in the situation and it's freaking me out probably. So now we have these patterns to look at. So it says on 169, you know, when we took, I'm just going to reference it generally. When we took step three, we made a decision, but we were unable to follow through so good or so easily on that decision to like heed a higher power or a higher purpose, because these patterns didn't just go away. Now we're like aware at step six, we're like aware. And I always try and remind myself that that's a good start. They say awareness is the first step. So the action of step six is considering. That's pretty much the first action word I could find. For me, it was really important to tie the defects to the eating disorder, you know, because they create the feelings which fuel the eating disorder and it fuels the cycle. And something I reflected on was like, when I act incongruously with my inner values, I suffer. And the inventory, like the fourth step inventory, shows where I acted in a way that at the time I rationalized, probably because it did benefit me in some temporary way, but overall it was unhelpful. I hurt others, and it all became a part of what the eating disorder had to cover up. So on the bottom of 169 to 170, it says like, you know, recognize two things. One, we were trying to get something. Two, the methods we used were ineffective and actually counterproductive. And I was, it kind of mentions the eating disorder, and that kind of clicked after a bit to me, because a very good example of counterproductive urges is the eating disorder. Like, I want to mess with my food. That's not going to help. Okay. I got you, Olga. And, so, but the defects are a little bit more insidious than the eating disorder. The eating disorder is pretty big. It's pretty obvious. It's pretty painful. And so sometimes the defects are as obvious and as painful, but sometimes they're not. And so step six is about exploring our willingness to let go of those things, all the things. Because like with behaviors, sometimes I think that there are behaviors that are less harmful than others, but actually they're all the same. And I think the same is true for defects of character. They all do hurt, even though, you know, they look different. So an example would be like, looking at what the defect gives me, as well as what it takes away, is extremely important for me. So an example would be like unreasonable expectations of self and others. If people meet those expectations, I feel like they've proved something and they're safer. It gives me a reason to turn people away. I get praise and recognition for my hard work. I feel more in control, subtly imposing these expectations on others. It protects me. I think these are all super important things to realize, and especially for me to connect with, because I have to understand where I'm coming from. But then to be able to see, okay, what happens? It sets me up for disappointment and failure. My mind is a miserable place to live. I upset others who feel judged by me. I am unforgiving. I don't take healthy risks. It keeps me from experiencing balance and trust in a relationship. So I think, and then I was told to just like rate my willingness of like 1 to 10. How willing are you to let it go? And, you know, just kind of take a stab at it. And then I was told to pray for the ones that I was really not so willing. In fact, my first time I went through it, it was like willing, not willing, or somewhat willing, or heck no, or something like that. And so the heck no's, they had to be the first ones to be prayed about. But I know now, like, that just from experience, the program really is a full circle experience. Like gossip is a big one. And I think it mentions this in the book, that sometimes we don't even want to act on our defects because we're just going to have to make amends for them. And that's true. I believe in the program to the extent that I know that if I don't make amends, I suffer. So it's a very real deterrent. You know, it helps me with restraint and of pen and tongue. And I will close with on 172, it says, we will do everything in our power to recover. And at the time, for me, that meant the steps. That's all it meant. And I was like, what does that mean? And I just, it, for me, it just meant keep going and complete the steps. As always, action is required. The more you put in, the more you get out of it. And I'll pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Emily, so much for your share, for your story, and for your study of step six. Okay, I'm looking at the call list. I don't see our phone operator, Jen, unless you're on the phone. Jen, are you there? Okay, that's okay. So we do have a phone list that we use for this meeting. And you can reach Jen by text to get your number on the phone list and to receive the phone list back. Jen's phone number is 760-450-5100. One more time, Jen is the phone list keeper for this workshop. You can reach her at 760-450-5100. We also have a WhatsApp group. Paul, would you be willing to speak to that for a second? Or I can give my number as well.
Yeah, sure. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
I'm in a busy train station, not sure how the audio is. So we have a WhatsApp group. And if you get on the WhatsApp app on your phone, you can search on my phone number, and I'll send you a link to join you into the group. My phone number is 314-707-6583, and I'll type it into the chat box as well. 314-707-6583. My name is Paul. Just send me a message on WhatsApp, and I'll link you into the WhatsApp group. We use it for sharing hopes and frustrations. We give each other mutual support, tips, advice. We share good news. We share gratitude, tips, all kinds of good stuff. It's a great group.
And milestones, right, Paul?
Mm-hmm. And milestones.
Thank you, Paul, for your service. Thank you, Jen, for your service. Though she's not here, I thank her in spirit. We will now open the meeting up for sharing, or you are free to ask questions to our speaker, Emily. If you are on the telephone, don't forget to press *6 to mute and unmute. Press *6 to re-mute afterwards. If you are on Zoom, you will click the mute icon to mute and unmute each other. An important reminder, especially after the October holiday, is that EDA is not about food or weight. And we ask that all members refrain from mentioning numbers, specific eating plans, specific foods. Also, we don't offer advice to others when we share at meetings. Please limit your sharing to 3 meetings. I'm going to keep a timer and I'll give a loving reminder when 3 minutes are met. So who would like to begin the sharing portion of our meeting?
Hey, Olga, this is MJ. I just wanted, FYI, the recording is still going, if we could get that shut off.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, MJ. Mm-hmm.
No worries.